Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Welcome to Pack Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Al. Andrew on the board. We have S&P futures. We're up again today, and I think we've got a week where we're just going to pour money into the system. S&P futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 88. They were up more than that earlier, but they're still up. We had another day yesterday that was up. Yesterday we were up 60 in the S&P and 150 in the NASDAQ. Big, huge day back with all the Magnificent Seven flying back up, except for NVIDIA, because those guys, as we talked about yesterday with Carl, had to do with other people. Now Google is sort of taking the lead and buying other people's chips, and we'll see how that goes. And of course, my favorite creature at NVIDIA is he came out today and he's talking about their stuff is still generations ahead, so don't buy that other new stuff, just buy our stuff. NVIDIA says its GPUs are a generation ahead of Google's AI chips. And meanwhile, Carl sent around to us a thing regarding that you can't have it both ways. I mean, NVIDIA is saying their new stuff is going to be so much better, yet they're also saying that the old stuff is going to be good for 10 years. I don't know how you can do both of those. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you? So, do you have one of those big honking NVIDIA chips sitting in your kitchen?
Oh, no, I had it implanted in my brain.
Ah, well, there you go. It's better, I guess. God. What are you doing tomorrow? You defrosting a bird? Are you pilfering off somebody else? What are you doing?
Absolutely not. I'm flying solo tomorrow, and I'm damn happy about it.
Really?
My daughter's going into Chicago with her mom to be with her family, and I always tell her, you know, your grandmother's in her 90s, so you better see her every chance you get. So I'm glad she's getting to do that. I am very, very, very happy. First of all, I have, like, you know, a dozen program reviews to get done by, you know, between tomorrow and Friday. So those are an annual exercise for all the programs that roll up under my responsibilities. This is the what are you going to do next with the program? It's sort of the strategy session of the program. So I have that chore to do. But tomorrow I expect to watch a lot of football in between my naps, and I think I may go over to a local steakhouse, and they have a Thanksgiving meal, so I may go over and watch some football, sit at the bar, have the Thanksgiving meal, and watch football. So that's going to be it. But I am happy to have no pressure to entertain this time around, no pressure to be anywhere at a specific time this time around. You know, the way things have gone in recent months, I am just happy to have some mellow time.
Well, there you go. It's not a bad plan.
Well, and then on Sunday I'm heading to Cleveland. I have a Monday appointment at the Cleveland Clinic. So that will be actually a couple of Monday appointments at the Cleveland Clinic. So my daughter's going with me for that. We're going to visit the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on Sunday. I have not been there before, and I'm looking forward to that.
I bet that's cool.
Yeah, you might as well. You know, I got to be there anyway. Might as well make a time of it. Although, I did get a little bit of a parking warning that they're near where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is, near where the Browns play, and they have a home game.
That would be a little dicey.
Good thing they suck, though, so maybe the crowd will be suppressed, especially if the weather's not good.
I think they still fill it up with the. I think they still support their teams pretty good there. Although I don't think what are they now? The Guardians? No, what are they?
Cleveland Browns.
Oh, what, the baseball team. What are they?
Baseball team is the Guardians, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, they used to be a really tough ticket to get when they first put that stadium up. I don't think it is anymore.
Yeah, I remember going to that stadium early on. It's very, very nice stadium.
Well, it's the same as Sox Park.
Now it's what we're probably looking at 30 years old now. So it's probably it was cutting edge at the time, and now they're probably clamoring for a new one.
Well, we had a dude down there that we were back when we're in more of an expansion mode. We wanted him to come work with PTI. He had kind of a totally different world. If you don't, this is a gross generalization, but if you've never known people from Ohio, they're kind of different than people from Illinois, and in some ways, I'm thinking maybe better, I don't know, but...
If we're really going to state that accurately, we'd probably say people from Illinois are different from anywhere else.
But the dude had a little investment advisement brokerage firm, and he was the nicest damn guy. He had real serious childhood diabetes issues, and he managed to be fine. You know, I mean, he managed it. I mean, and he would constantly go to places that had where kids had childhood diabetes, and he'd talk about himself and how he had managed to manage the system, and how he had family and a good job, and he was in good shape, worked out all the time, and how you can work your way through it. This has to be, well, I'm going to say 2011, 12, somewhere in there, Kevin. And he was with this place, and it's so different, though. In Ohio, if you have a guy that you trust, and, and I'm in the same business here, obviously, but it's totally different. I mean, if somebody wanted an estate done, they'd call him up, and they'd say, a guy named John. So John, he'd set him up. He wouldn't get paid for it. He'd set him up with a good estate lawyer. You just did all the stuff within the people you knew. And the guy'd come to his office. They'd go in his conference room, close the door, and the guy would meet with the estate lawyer. But it would be, you trusted people to do stuff. It's not like here where every time you see, you can talk to people that listen to a show or are friends with somebody or have been somebody's friend forever and is a Toyota dealer, and they hear something 50 bucks better some other place, and they go buy it there. But we don't have anywhere near the interpersonal relationship kind of thing they do in Ohio. It's a totally different culture. And you wouldn't think it would be, but it is. I think he finally succumbed to the diabetes or something happened to him, but kind of lost track. But he had, back when the stadium was first built, well, this was years after it was built, it wasn't 30 years ago, but those guys, they were in the stadium club. And if you look closely at that stadium, flip Sox Park around, it's the same place. Same architects, the same pitch to the seats, same everything. Except the stadium club, instead of being on the right field side, was on the left field side. Exact same stadium club.
Yeah.
With the different levels in the stadium club and everything above it. Well, these guys, every night, there were three or four people that had seats. They would have one of the ladies at one of the places started calling at like 5:01 to reserve the table the next night on the bottom rung of the stadium club, as close as you could get to the field where nobody was around you. There was a big circular table for about 8 or 9 people that they reserved that table every night. And one of the 7 or 8 guys was there like every seven nights with clients and family and stuff. And they ate dinner and watched the game from there. It was really pretty neat.
Yeah.
But somebody got on the phone every night right at 5 and started calling to get that table. I don't know if that's going on anymore. And they used to have a deal, even the people who work like in gas stations and stuff. You walk in the gas station, you see some, lady behind the counter. And she's wearing an Indians jersey. And I go, everybody in Cleveland gets to wear a Cleveland jersey to work the day of a game. I mean, you've got to be kidding me.
I have seen a lot of places, live in Milwaukee sometime and watch what Fridays are like before a Packers game. Everybody's in their Packers stuff.
Well, the people in Milwaukee still have tickets to like 4 games a year, right?
They did when I was there, which was early 2000s. I assume it still continued. But yeah, so there's, they have the Milwaukee plan and the Green Bay plan, and the way that worked was, you know, back in the old days, the Packers used to come down and play several games in County Stadium, so the, you know, Milwaukee residents would buy that ticket package because the games were going to be played in Milwaukee, and so you figure if they were playing, you know, probably a 14 or 12 game schedule. It was probably 12 back in those days, so they would get three games in each plan of the home games, you know, or maybe it was 2 and 4, whatever the number was, doesn't matter. And they just continued those ticket plans, even though they stopped playing games in Milwaukee. So, I don't know if they still have it that way or not, but it certainly was that way once upon a time.
I think they do, because my buddy Dr. J went to a Packer game on a Sunday night, and he was planning on driving back after the game, which he ended up doing. But it must have been one of those games, because he figured, you know, he'd buzz right back after the game. Well, evidently, the road from Green Bay to Milwaukee was bumper to bumper the whole way.
Yeah, it could have been. I think it pretty much is anyway. I mean, you know, that little corridor. I've been up to a game up there, and it was. It was definitely a parade.
Well, for those that don't go to these, and I think I've been to my last one, but for those that don't go to these games, if you go to you can find an Irish game at 1 o'clock, you know, in a game will at least be over, you know, whatever, at 3:30. But the people peeling out afterward, back to Chicago, back to wherever, it takes place over a 2 or 3 hour time period. People go back to the car, maybe have a sandwich, maybe have a beer, BS for a little bit, and watch things thin out, and then they go. But if it's a night game and it lets out at like 12:30, everybody wants out of there in a second. It's a whole different program.
Yeah, and it isn't, honestly, Tom, it isn't that different, especially when you get late season for the 3:30 Eastern games.
Right. Yeah, probably isn't.
Game kicks off at 3:30, 3:45. And by the time you're done, it's dark. It's, you know, it's November cold, which, you know, it may not be awful, but it's, you know, it is definitely cold, and people want to clear out of there. So if you're looking, let's just say 3:30, 4:30, 5:30, 6:30, it's probably 7:30 by the time you get to your car. Excuse me. By the time you get to your car, you're closing in on 8 o'clock, and yeah, I mean, hanging out in the parking lot at that point is, you know, just not very appealing.
Well, I went to one of the basketball games. I think you dragged me down to. It was one of them, might have been those Ring of Honor games or whatever. I don't know, but anyway, the difference in basketball is there's not near as many people. But if it's full, the lot's really full, and there's virtually no. They don't think it's going to be full or something, so you don't get the normal amount of cops and people directing people out of there. So it actually. If the basketball game is crowded, it's a little problem getting out. So I walk out and I got my truck, and all of a sudden there's no way I'm going anywhere, right? So I said, you know, this is crazy. So I open the tailgate. I had a cooler. I grab a beer, I'm sitting on the tailgate. Some guy comes by, looks at all the traffic, looks at me, and he goes, hey, you got another one of those? I go, yes, I do. The guy was a professor someplace. We had this nice conversation for about an hour. He goes, it looks like we'd go. And off we went. You never know who you might meet and where, Kevin. But if you got a tailgate and you got a cooler, you can make friends, just the way the world is.
Yeah, you can.
You and I were jousting back and forth a little bit on the basketball, because the Irish are off in Vegas, and I dug back to our year, well, my senior year, and it used to be the basketball team. I don't think they did anything till November 30th. It was their first practice or something.
No, well, they'd start the season the 1st of December, so they were probably practicing, end of October was probably when they were starting back in the 1970s.
Well, now it seems like there's no.
And really, they're starting practice now in mid-October.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that was, Kevin and I were jousting about, you know, the guys, I said, when the hell do they go to class? I mean, do they, you know, this is interesting, Kevin, because my buddy Bill, his his daughter's married these guys that, anyway, they all live up on the north side, way north side, and they've done very well, and they're big athletes. A couple of guys played lacrosse in college and stuff, and so the kids are in all these sports, and we're talking, you know, they're 11 years old. They're in travel teams for hockey all over the country. I mean, I have no idea what the budget is for this stuff, but it's hockey, it's lacrosse, wherever it is, and they're playing in Chicago once in a while, and they're playing somewhere else. And I go, oh, Bill, when did he go to school? He looks at me and goes, who gives a crap about school? They're playing hockey. I'm like, okay, then. I can't imagine in grammar school us being let out of school to go play baseball somewhere. I'm not saying it was better, Kevin, but it's different.
It is definitely different. Yeah, and the students now, and, you know, the only ones I ever have, doing the side hustle with covering Notre Dame basketball for several years now, but I still hear the interviews that they do now. So I've heard Marcus Burton after a night game saying, yeah, I got a presentation tomorrow morning at night, my 9 o'clock class, you know. So I know they're going, you know.
Well, some are, but I think the difference is when you had, I'm going to say, the culture change, and I'm just noticing the difference. I'm not opining on right or wrong. I'm just noticing the difference.
Oh, and I've got some thoughts on that too. But keep going.
Well, but the culture change is as much as you try to do it. Now, granted, if you go to school, you're going to want to get. You need 120 credits to graduate. All right. So if you're in a semester program, that means you're taking 15 an average of 15 a semester.
Yep.
You know, the math is not. All right.
Yeah, but so knock it down to 12 because they'll take two courses in the summer.
Well, okay, but that's what I'm saying. Part of the culture. The culture used to be you didn't do that in the summer. You went home and got a job, okay? And that's what most there wasn't all this summer stuff. I mean, unless somebody flunked. So the idea was to keep just about every sport a one semester sport. So that the other semester you took 18, and the semester you're playing you took 12. Because then it makes it to 30. Duh. Well, there's no attempt at that now. I mean, football.
Right. They come in before their first year and get some courses out of the way in the summer. Then now.
But I mean, it's not designed at all to be what you always call an extracurricular activity. You have to take classes in the summer. Maybe guys get out of high school early. I can't imagine me walking into Brother Rock and saying, by the way, I'm graduating in December. He just said, get your ass out of here. I mean, nobody would ever even dream to do that, Kevin. Again, it's not a question of right or wrong. It's a question of...
I had a classmate do that.
And didn't they let him go?
Well, he wasn't an athlete. He enrolled in college early, and they still let him go.
Really?
Yeah. He was done. He completed the curriculum. He was taking summer courses, and so he completed the curriculum and.
Oh, he did summer courses. Okay, but I mean, I think that in terms of credit hours, if there's such a thing in high school, I had plenty by the time I was done my senior year. I say by Christmas of my senior year, but in Marist eyes, I wasn't done. I had a semester to go. It's a question of whose eyes you're looking through, right? Sometimes. Anyway, but now basketball has become a two-semester sport. And that was what I was trying to clumsily say on our going back and forth yesterday. I mean, what used to happen is started December 1st, they played a few games, and then they stopped playing for like 2-3 weeks during finals. There's no hint of that now. Nobody cares about finals, do they? I mean, I'm not saying it's whatever, yeah, Kevin. It's just different.
And Digger Phelps used to take his team on the road once they got to the end of the semester, and they would be going, you know, West Coast, it was like when the Bulls go on their circus trip, you know, when every year when the circus comes to town and they go on an extended road trip, you know, that was how Phelps used to schedule, and all the home games were when the students are around. Hell, now I'll probably go to 3 or 4 games for each of the basketball teams, and there's no students around. In fact, they'll start the conference season before the students get back. So, yeah, it is kind of a weird... It's different. There's a couple of things academically that work well for this now that weren't around when we were there. So one of them is that, you know, there's a lot of live streaming now. So if they, you know, while the students are on the road, they may attend their classes via Zoom.
I'm sure in Vegas that's just what they're all doing.
Well, if you need to be in class to for credits, yeah, you can carve out a few hours for your day to do that. It's not that hard. I've been away at conferences or things like that and taught and said I got to duck up to my room because I have a class and I'll conduct my class via Zoom. So it's doable. So that's part of it. But there are a lot of athletes, and I don't think Notre Dame does as much of this, but a lot of schools do, is you have the asynchronous online classes. And what that means is you're taking an online class. In fact, I'm teaching one right now. You're taking a class. There is no classroom session. So it requires a lot of self-discipline to do it well, because there are specified things that you have to do every week. You know, there's modules 1 through 8. We do 8-week classes. There's reading, there's preparation, there are assignments. I grade the assignments. I have a real chore to make sure I give everybody really good feedback on their assignments and not just, oh, good job, here's your grade. You really have to engage them a little bit on that. And then, you know, I make myself available. You know, assignments are due on Monday for my class, so I'm online for an hour every Sunday evening, because that's when they're doing their homework. And so if anybody has any questions, they can drop in on Zoom and ask me any questions. And then, you know, the rest of it is you have some interaction, back and forth via email. If anybody does need to set up some time to talk, then we'll pick out a time when we can both make it. But otherwise, it's very, you know, there's a lot of self-direction to it. And I think a lot of athletes now are doing those kinds of classes in school.
You hope they are.
Well, yeah, I hope they are, and I think they are. I think a lot of them are. Most of these guys aren't idiots. There's certainly an element of people who think, hey, the only thing I should ever care about is basketball and the rest of it is just a chore. But especially because, at least in the basketball world, especially because they have the option to go G League if they want to, for the top ones. So you don't have to be in school unless you want to be in school. And then there are some other, some other options besides that they can do. Most of these guys realize that there is some value to them completing their courses and to being educated. And I've talked to a lot of athletes over the years. They're not idiots. They're driven people. That's what makes them great athletes. And so when they make up their mind that they're going to go to school too, they're kind of driven for that.
I think the Notre Dame basketball program, which has always been, you know, cleaner than can be because they don't want anything to touch the football program. I think you're getting a different set than you are just about anywhere else.
I would agree.
But, I mean, the simple questions...
I would agree. Let me say different than a lot of places.
Yeah, but, when you...
As I will also fully acknowledge that just in the ACC, we've seen academic fraud in the athletics departments at North Carolina, at Syracuse. I'm trying to think of where else. There were 3 or 4 of them. So, I don't doubt that. But what I am saying is that, a lot of these, that's not most. I don't think that's most. And it's just not my impression of it. We tend to, those are the ones that make headlines, so it probably skews our view on it.
Well, it doesn't, I was talking to my bro, and he doesn't usually opine on a lot of this stuff, but he was talking about, I think we really want to get to is the Ohio thing with the high schools. But my brother says, when did all these rules change? He goes, how do you run your third school? Do you even have a major? Do you have credits that will transfer? They transfer into the same major in new places. He says, you used to have to get at least 30 credits, maybe 60 in some schools. At the school you graduate from, they'd only accept a certain amount from other places. He goes, is anybody paying attention to any of that stuff anymore, or are they just guys just go from place to place and nobody cares if they ever go to class. I mean,
those are the ones that are kind of weird, because it is pretty, there's a lot of credits that'll transfer. There are some that won't. It just depends on the school. I'll give you an example of a guy I saw yesterday. Van Allen Leuven is now playing for North Carolina State, which I didn't realize. Well, Leuven started at Notre Dame, played a year there. When Mike Bray left, he decided to leave. Then he went to Vanderbilt. He spent a year at Vanderbilt. Then he went to North Carolina, spent a year there, and now he's at NC State. I don't know how he maintains his progress towards a degree through that.
Well, he keeps dropping down in, shall we say, institutional reputation every time.
Well, yes and no. I mean, certainly Vanderbilt's got a great reputation.
Well, that's what I mean. Notre Dame, Vanderbilt, North Carolina.
North Carolina is a really, really good school. It's one of the best public universities in the country.
Tell that to, who's the guy in the Bears? It was part of the, well, he took black studies or something?
I know they had the academic fraud, but what I'm saying is, look, if Leuven had, let's just pick out a discipline. So say he was majoring in economics. There's a core there that he has to take. Some of those courses, probably almost all of them, will transfer credit to the next school. But they might have some program-specific things that they do that others don't do. And so you're not going to have those when you go in. You're going to have to, if you want a degree, it's going to have to find its way onto your transcript. So it just depends on, you know, from school to school. And, you know, I got to believe that some of his credits get lost in the transfers. May not be a lot, but it'll be some.
Well, let's bring up the gorilla in the room today did the governor sign it in Ohio? It's going to allow high school kids to get
signed it yet or not? But yeah, they're going to allow they're going to have NIL guidelines for their high school students.
I know a lot of people.
I sent you that commercial, didn't I? The graduation ceremony where the parents sold the naming rights to their kids.
God.
So, you know, they didn't announce, Susie Smith. They said Jablonski Auto Body, God. LLC.
Well, you know, I, as we get on, I always look at this from two sides, Kevin, and that's why I think, you know, the show is interesting for people, is everybody comes with a different point of view, and we sometimes meet in the middle, sometimes we don't. There are people who are so into this that they honestly think that, you know, part of their body grows an inch whenever their team wins. I hope most people don't think that happens, because let me tell you, it doesn't. I'm just curious, what exactly would possess, you know, PTI Securities? I think if we were a lot bigger and did commercials, and then we had somebody, male or female, that was terrific, that was taking finance, that was doing something, that actually could maybe intern for a summer or something. And could they be the spokesman for PTI saying, God, I've learned a lot from these guys, they're really good, something along those lines? I could roll that. You know, I could roll those bones. I think the State Farm ads with Caitlin Clark, she's pretty good. I mean, there's a couple other people that are pretty good. I think Hannah Hidalgo does a nice job in the Red Bull. I mean, they're regular personalities, and they do pretty... The idea of winging money at a high school kid, other than that, the only people I think it would be worthwhile, and we kind of discussed this the other day, I don't know if it was you or with Carl, with Lou, I don't know that at the end of the day, Under Armour, Nike, all this stuff, pouring all these monies in all these places, I don't know that collectively it's been good for any of them, Kevin. Now, is it whether one person could stop? I don't know about that. But I don't see Nike stock going to the moon in the last 10 years. Matter of fact, it's gone nowhere. You know, I don't know that. I mean, what would possess, you know, if PTI had a board of directors and it wasn't just me and my brother and other people here, how would I go to a board and say I gave $1 million to Mount Carmel for their football guys? I mean, what exactly kind of, what are we going to get from that exactly?
I mean, well, you're not. At least to a point, but I don't think we're talking about $1 million either.
Well, I think we're. I actually heard. I mentioned this to you 2 years ago. My buddy Kendall, he's you know, he knows a lot of people from the South Side, and he said one of his buddies, his kid was getting six figures playing basketball at some Chicago public school place, you know, under the table. And the only thing I can think of, Kevin, there's no way that kid's going to have his name on a shoe. I mean, who the hell knows who the kid is? It's got to be payment early on to get him to the right college. What else could it be?
Well, it could be that. It could also be, and you do, you used to run into this all the time. I got to assume it's still continuing, and it would absolutely show up. I remember reading a lot about it in the Chicago Publicly. There's a lot of people who are trying to latch on to the athlete now, knowing that being part of the posse when that athlete becomes a pro can be a very lucrative thing.
Well, can you tie somebody up that's under 18? Can you say, I'm going to give you $100,000 if I'm Nike, but for the next 10 years you can only, you know, only wear Nike stuff? I don't know that a 17-year-old can sign that contract.
Yeah, so, well, a 17-year-old can't legally anyway, but
yeah.
It's one thing if it's Nike, it's another thing if it's just some gangster wannabe from the city who is also saying, by the way, I've given you a lot of money. And I know of situations where people, you know, high school athletes were given money to be steered to a certain college, and when they start to waver on that commitment, they get told in no uncertain terms that you might have a hard time running on those broken legs.
Yeah. Shanny said the same thing down in Florida. If you see the uncle all of a sudden driving a brand new pickup truck and you decide to change schools, doesn't go over too well.
Yeah, these are not nice people who are doing that.
But why would you and I? We use Notre Dame games, and I probably talk about too much on the show. We use Notre Dame guys as a way for us to sort of hang together. And once every couple of years, people will around the country will come to Chicago, and it's an excuse to get together on a certain date. But at the end of the day, does it really matter to any of us whether they win or lose? I mean, what difference does it make in our life? None.
Well, other than I do enjoy. I enjoy watching a good team.
I want
them to succeed.
I do too. But I mean, at the end of the day, we still got to go to class on Monday, right? Whether they want or want.
At the end of the day, I got to show up for work on Monday.
Yeah. To a point, I really enjoy it, but I never understood the people that drove it way further than that. Like, it's their life's thing to have, like the commercials, they have state win. I mean, really? Well, they don't care about you. Just saying. I still don't understand why you were not in the booth with the Supreme Court people. Those are your people.
Well, Tom, I don't know what to tell you. If I had an affiliation with the law school, I probably could have found my way in there, but I don't.
Did you sure you looked under the mailbox? And you know that's where your invite was.
Where my invitation was. That's most likely. That's it.
I'd blame the post office. What do you think?
It's easy to blame the post office. They had a fun. You know how Saturday Night Live used to. I don't know if they still do them, but they used to do those spoof commercials. They had a commercial for a service that would actually. Pretend they lost your package.
God.
So, you know, if you forgot to send something on time, you hired these people, and they would take your package, and they would stomp on it, and they would mess it up, and make it look like it was mishandled, and then they would show up at the destination apologizing and saying it was our fault, we were late.
God.
What a great service that would be, huh?
Well, I got a interesting thing maybe a month ago, heading out on a Saturday, and I see my mail guy. And he's been my mail guy since I moved in there. And I go, hey, how you doing? And, you know, he's a nice guy. This African-American dude, God, the guy never rested, Kevin. Up and down steps. I don't know what kind of shape he was in, but I swear to God, he acted like he was 25 and he's retirement age. He goes, you're going to get to my witness? You see this? Put this mail in the mail. It's the last letter I'll ever deliver. I'm retiring after today. And I go, really? God, I'm really going to miss you. I mean, what a nice dude. That guy... He was not your normal people's impression of a post office worker, for sure. Knew everybody in the neighborhood. The best is there's a lady who's in my garden apartment downstairs. She's fine, I guess. everything's an adventure, but I never let her put the gas or anything on her stuff, right? I mean, I pay it and tell her how much it is, because all she has to do is not pay it. Maybe one of the garage won't open, right, or something. And so all of a sudden he says to me, "Hey, did you ever rent that apartment? I might have somebody." And I go, "Yeah, it's been rented for like a year." "How could it be? Nobody. There hasn't been one piece of mail delivered down there." I go, "I don't want to know. I know I get the utility bills. The rest of the stuff, I don't want to know. I don't know where it's going." Sometimes you just don't ask questions, Kevin. It's just one of those things. But anyway, there's a lot of people in some of these neighborhoods that have been there forever. And they know everybody. They're terrific people. And everybody badmouths them all the time. I don't get it, but people like to generalize, don't they?
They do. They do. Hey, we were talking with Lou last week, and I am pretty sure I've been looking a little bit more on the settlement for schools making direct payments for NIL rights, and then individual deals. And what I'm seeing here, I don't think one preempts the other. Or in other words, if Jeremiah Love goes out and gets a $1 million deal, that counts against Notre Dame's $20.5 million limit of what they can pay.
I don't see how it could, because I mean, it's directly in violation of the order from the Supreme Court, wouldn't it be?
So I don't think that's the case. And so Jeremiah Love is completely. He actually had a comic book signing yesterday. He's got his own line of comic books now, called Jeremonster.
Good for him.
Which is pretty cool. Well, and it's really it's sort of about him, because he was a big introvert as a youngster and got a lot of grief for it, and so he's sort of made it into the message for kids. But he also happens to have endorsements with Samsung, New Balance, and Celsius, which is a beverage I've had. It's pretty good.
What's the protocol and of Under Armour is Notre Dame's an Under Armour school of getting a New Balance endorsement.
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. And I don't know the protocol other than I don't know. I haven't paid attention to things like his shoes. You know, certainly his uniform's going to be Under Armour. They're supplying the uniforms to Notre Dame.
They supply the shoes too.
Yes, I know. And so there's going to be. So the question is, can he wear the shoes of his choice or not? Now, I don't know the answer to that, so I just haven't
remembered the Michael Jordan thing at the Olympics.
Asked for me to see the logo.
Remember the Michael Jordan fiasco at the Olympics?
Yeah, I remember him just having the flag cover up the logo. So you have that, that's kind of interesting that there's a conflict there, and.
What do you think of the detail of that? I mean, I don't see any way he can wear his Notre Dame jersey with the Under Armour on it in the who's his place in a New Balance ad. I don't see how that could work.
Oh, I would say no, he can't do that. And I also don't know what he's doing for New Balance, so that's part of the equation here. So let's sort of tick down the list, and then you can ask that question again, or at least we can discuss that question again. So there is the school-based pay, that's taxable income. The athletes have to report what they earn.
Back up a sec. Now is that money coming from the Notre Dame Treasurer's office, is that coming from a group of supporters that give money to Notre Dame to spread out?
Directly from shared revenue, so it's coming out of athletic department revenue.
All right, so that's got to be some minimal stuff. It's 15 grand or 20 grand or something, or five.
Well, if 20.5 million per school, start spreading it across the football program and the and the basketball programs, and I don't know, some schools might have money to spend on baseball or something like that.
This is totally separate from the Brady Quinn group, totally separate from individual stuff. This is like the third leg. This is what the school pays you.
Yeah,
without having you go to Pete's Pizza.
It looks like those collectives are gone. I mean, they're done.
Okay. But, I mean, the money's got to be getting the university somehow. They're not going to turn it down.
Yeah, so, you know, there's probably plenty of ways you can donate to the general fund for the athletic department. And the school determines how to distribute it. The restrictions are there is no pay for play, so you can't tie it to athletic performance. That doesn't mean you can't say my best player is going to get paid more than everybody else, but you can't have a bonus for going over 100 yards this week.
Okay,
so that's out. You are not allowed to use them as recruiting inducements. Now, I don't know.
Oh, come on. How do you not do that?
Well, that's the age-old thing about people recruiting inducements. It's a violation if you do it and you get caught.
All right, so your son's there and you say, by the way, how much are you guys paying? You say nothing? You zip your lip? What do you do?
No, I think when he comes to his campus visit, you might have some of the athletes share what they're getting with him, you know, in their conversations. But you can't say, well, just tell me what the other guys are bidding and I'll outbid them. That's what you're not allowed to do.
Remember the story about the grandmother that said, until you're willing to pay what Saban's paying, get out of my house?
Sure.
Grandmother wasn't supposed to know, was she?
Yeah, no. So there also are direct guarantees are forbidden. In other words, schools are prohibited from guaranteeing any player money from a third-party NIL deal. So Notre Dame can't say, well, I promise you Under Armour will give you something.
Well, that's where the guy in Las Vegas got in trouble, right?
They have to stay out of the middle of that.
Which, again, they don't.
Well, they don't. But this is new rules. So yeah. How they enforce them, you know, they didn't do a good job of enforcing the old rules 10 years ago. So, you know, so we have that. There are reporting requirements. Athletes are required to report NIL deals of more than $600 to their school, and there actually is a portal for doing that. So you have to do that. And then there's also stipulations about foreign student athletes that have been there all along, and that is if you're on an F1 student visa, you are not able to earn NIL money in the U.S.
By the way, for those that don't earn up on their taxes, which, by the way, I am not, $600 just happens to be the number that if you have a corporation and if you're writing it off, which a lot of people don't, but if you're paying somebody to shovel your snow, as soon as you get to the cash number of 600, you're supposed, if you're going to write that off, you better, well, you're supposed to do it anyway. I mean, you need to say who the person is. So if the person makes $700 shoveling your snow, he probably doesn't know it, but he owes 15% to the government for payroll taxes, starting from dollar one. So when people say that people don't pay income tax, that's a load of crap. Because, well, they don't pay the income tax part, but they sure pay the payroll tax, right, Kevin?
Yeah.
Keep going.
Okay. As far as third-party deals, they can still earn money through the third-party deals with brands, companies, and there are collectives. Okay. So groups tend to run. I take back what I said about collectives being gone. But examples of what they can do, because it requires that they that there's a valid business purpose for what they do. So a collective just can't pay them. They have to have a valid business purpose. So an example might be an apparel company using a player's image in advertising, or even an athlete appearing in a TV commercial for a local law firm would be cleared. Not cleared would be a collective charging an admission fee.
I'll bet you can't wear, if somebody doesn't know who your left tackle is, and you're going to have him model a flannel shirt, I'll bet you can't put a Notre Dame cap on him, and I bet you can't use Notre Dame in the ad.
Yeah, don't know. So, would make sense, but no, I don't know. So, but not cleared would be you can't charge admission fee to a golf tournament. This is an example, with the primary purpose is to raise money to pay the athletes, because this is not a service offered to the general public for profit. So, you can't, you know, that's not legit.
But you could have five guys over to talk about football at Pete's Pizza.
Oh yeah, you can do an appearance. Yes.
All right. So where we're at so far, and we'll probably continue this on Friday. Where we're at so far is you've got the school giving people money, which NCAA I guess can control. You have the people that go get their own deal, which is a Supreme Court thing. There's still this middle ground that seems a little wobbly, doesn't it?
Well, it can be, yeah. It's the valid business purpose is the big thing. Is, you know, you have to actually do something for it, and it has to be proportional. So they're not going to clear $500,000 for an athlete who makes an occasional social media post or something like that.
How about the $600 an hour to go to a hospital one night a week and talk to sick people and then call it a charity?
They're probably not going to approve $600 an hour for that.
Well, who's the they?
You have to put that into the portal, and there is a review group that does that, and the review this goes into their clearinghouse, the clearinghouse is called NIL Go, operated by the College Sports Commission, which was created with assistance from Deloitte, this is what reviews the third-party deals over $600.
How do we get on that committee making a bunch of dough?
I have no idea. So they have that, but it has to have a valid purpose to it, the third include a specific direct activation, meaning athletes must perform clear service for the compensation. So really, what they're saying is you can do all the third party deals that you want, and Caitlin Clark can get paid a hell of a lot of money from Nike to do endorsements and have her own line of shoes for Nike, because they can demonstrate the value compared to what other athletes have done for Nike, but on the other hand, if you're asking, Caitlin Clark would be a bad example. If you're saying, pick somebody who is not nearly as marketable, but is a really good player. And if you say, well, that person doesn't add any value, I mean, yeah, I suppose you can create your shoe line for that person. But if all you're doing is asking that person to make some, social media posts or do an appearance at a local store for Nike, the $1 million is going to get nixed. They're going to say there's no way it's worth that kind of value.
Well, that leaves a lot up to interpretation, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does, but I think there's a lot that will be obvious, and then there will be some at lesser dollar amounts that won't be nearly as obvious.
Yeah, hey, for Friday, would you mind, I think you were probably listening a little on the Hal stuff yesterday, but Hal's all over this, and you know what, some of the stuff he's writing, we have several people on the show, both Hal and Wayne are writing stuff right now that I think is spectacular, and Hal, he got sent an article by one of his buddies. Right now he's all over it like a terrier to a bone. It has to do with the structural issues in banking when we went from a reserve requirement sort of governance of the money supply and things to a capital structure in the bank, and how one is totally basically bleep canned smaller loans, because you have to have more capital for a smaller loan. So you're much better off, or both in terms of hassle and in money, giving one loan to Amazon or some rich dude for $1 million than to have five loans to five plumbing companies at $200,000. And I don't know, we can talk a little bit more about it maybe with Russell, but I'd like your interpretation, Kevin. How much of that, as you know, as I'm aging, maturing, whatever you want to call it, I don't think this stuff is random. I think all this stuff is intended. These unintended consequences just manage to squash little people and do good stuff for big people. I used to think that, oh man, people did the right thing and it just worked out this way. I don't think that way at all anymore. I mean, I just absolutely do not.
It's too frequent not to be the case.
Yeah, and because you're our closest thing to banking, a banking dude. If you could opine on that Friday, I would love it.
Even though
we're going to have Lou on with you Friday, but still, we can talk about that for a little bit, because...
That's okay. I love having Lou on with me, so that's that'll work. But, yeah, just to give you a summary statement about it now, it is different when you get into different markets. So, you know, if you look at the market where I live, and you have, you know, thriving banks that are not, you know, major market banks, then the plumbing company is going to get its loans here. I don't know what you do in the Chicago area, though.
Well, I was going to say the Chicago area is probably the best at that, because Illinois was the last to go branch banking. But I think where you live and where I live is a real outlier compared to the rest of the country. I don't know how many smaller banks. Remember, I used to walk around in San Francisco. It's been a long time. And all I ever saw was Wells Fargo.
But you know what? The ones that would interest me in the Chicago area would be kind of interesting, because Marquette's still there, right?
Well, Marquette, Lakeside, there's a whole bunch
Marquette,
of them.
Marquette, Lakeside, so you still have those middle market banks. I'd be real interested to know, you know, where Wintrust falls in there, because obviously they're a recognizable name because they sponsor so many sports things and even have, I think, Wintrust Arena, which is, isn't that the the one?
But I'm going to say where Audrey lives in Orland, if you put a mile radius on that, there's got to be six banks, Kevin, of middle to lower end.
The reason I ask about Wintrust is it started out a long time ago. In fact, one of my classmates from high school was the longtime CEO. I don't know if he's still there. But started out as a Winnetka bank.
So, really?
Thus the wind part of Wintrust. But it has grown tremendously, and I wonder how its presence, what its market is in the Chicago area now, if it has really outgrown that, you know, that middle market touch, or if it's still there. So that would be interesting, and I don't know how I can find that out. Nobody's gonna let me look at their loan portfolio. So but that would be my question, if some banks outgrown it. But when, you know, over here in Indiana, when you're looking at your First Sources and Centiers, and a number of others. There's a number of other local ones that are smaller than those. Because Centere's footprint is all over north central Indiana, but also northwest Indiana. So they're all over the place. First Source will be into Michigan as well as and they're based in South Bend. Those are good sized operations, but they are serving the communities here.
Are they in business just to get bought? The reason why I ask is I've mentioned that.
No, they've been around too long for me to believe that they're in business to get bought.
The reason why I ask is the place I always talk about was the First National Bank of Evergreen Park, right? It was absolutely the center of the community. I mean, if you want a loan, you went there and got it. Well, they got taken over by Old Kent. We got taken over by Fifth Third. They tore this gorgeous building down in this massive vault and all the drive-ins, and now it's a car dealership. Well, when it got bought, some of the people went down the block and opened up the Evergreen Park Community Bank. And of course, my mother, who was still alive, took all her dough and went down there because she knew the people and blah, blah, blah. And they all of a sudden, they just had all kinds of people. Same thing with Beverly Bank. They opened one up right next to the Rock Island Station on 103rd, right? And so they all did really well. Well, evidently, the Evergreen Park Community Bank just got bought. So I'm sure the people who started it have a real nice payday on that. It's been 20 years, but I think they probably made money along the way, and now, you know, hit the home run. So it's a lot of stuff to talk about in all this, and I don't understand how this capital stuff ever replaced just a simple reserve requirement. I mean, maybe I'm old school, but that, I don't get that at all, Kevin. I mean, I knew something was weird when Robert was one of the guys at the Fed who said given how screwed up these things are, you've got to let the clearing agents, not the clearing agents, but the OCC and those people into the Fed because they can't deposit money in a bank overnight. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, Robert, what are you talking about? A bank, let's say they don't give loans and you can't give them money. What exactly is a bank all about if you can't do those two things? And he's, no, no, if you drop $400 million on J.P. Morgan, and Jamie Dimon himself has to approve that deposit because they have to have more capital because the money might leave the next day. And I go, well, if it leaves the next day, they're right back where they started from. What's the problem? It's not the way this works. And I'm thinking, who designed this? You know, I don't begin to know the nuts and bolts of this like Robert does, but it seems kind of odd to me, doesn't it, Kevin? I mean, even if you say the money's
going to... And look, this market, you know, while we have the independent or the locally owned and operated bank. We also have Chase, B of A, you know, all the big banks are here too. So, Wells Fargo, all of them are in the market here as well. So there has to, you know, and they're probably, my guess is, without, you know, knowing every business's banking relationships, that some of the larger corporations that are here, you know, some of the big RV companies, I don't know, you know, maybe a company that really has grown like a tire rack or somebody, and I think Tire Rack got bought by somebody now, you know, maybe some of those, are banked by all the biggies, but there's a pretty thriving small business community in this area. And they've got to have their banking relationships. So,
well, you think they use it just to suck up the deposits?
What, like a first source, just to suck up deposits?
Well, the Chase place across the street here, downtown. I mean, is it just to suck up deposits? I mean, I don't know if you walk in there and get a loan. Maybe you can.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure they want, you know, they want deposits because, you know, you need to fuel your balance sheet. Even though those are liabilities, they're also cash. You know, they're cash. So I am reasonably sure that that's the primary thing for them. But they also, you know, there's also a lot of national companies that do business in this area that have either branches or distribution centers or, you know, things like that. And so part of the banking relationship is that, you know, it may be a nationwide banking relationship, but you still have to have a place here for the local business to operate.
Maybe Friday we'll talk about that. I can never understand. Well, I can't say it never. I don't know the little walk-up places like on Armitage Avenue, where you got the one teller, the security guard, and the one person sitting at the desk to open up accounts. Evidently, they must be worth it because there's all kinds of them. Everybody thought nobody would ever do it with the internet, right? And yet they're there. They keep building new ones.
Yeah, I think that's a demographic thing. Okay, well, let me.
Yeah, do we have Russell or do we have Alyssa or both?
Russell, good morning, Russell.
Hey, what's going on?
How are you?
Happy pre-gobble day.
Yeah, how about it? Yeah.
I think you had, or at least Chief had like the crazy South Side mom. I had the crazy Southern mom. Honest to God, she would walk around all day the day before Thanksgiving and just say gobble.
Gobble.
I should write a book about my mother.
Gobble
to both of you, because it would drive my sister nuts. I kind of got used to it.
Well, I don't know what my mom would. I don't know what my mom would do today, because every year she got the fresh turkey from Rosebud Farm, and I heard her out of business. I don't know what she'd do.
You go find her. We spent a year living in Kansas, and we don't really talk about that.
Why would you?
It was one of those things that it was a professional mishap that we have righted since. I think I'm fine. So all the things that you do, you know, that lead to where you are, we're good for a reason, I guess. But we would actually, you know, like we picked out our turkey. Well, when it was alive, when we lived in Kansas. Yeah. In fact, your favorite, my oldest daughter, pointed at the one that she wanted. And it was actually the one that scared her when we walked up to the turkey bin. Aggressive one, she pointed at that one, and I was like, dude, you really screwed up coming after her.
Yeah, so. It wanted to hiss at her, and she said, you're a dead turkey.
She said that one. And he was on our table in 36 hours.
You know, Mr. 1%er, you can still do that in Chicago at a few spots.
Can you? Well, still go and pick them out?
Well, the gentleman building, one of my good buddy, and he's been the engineer in our building forever. You've probably met him, Salvador. Well, unfortunately, his dad passed yesterday morning, so he's heading down to Mexico. He's a terrific guy. But normally today, he would be at the place over on, I think it's on like 22nd and Pulaski. You walk in and you pick out your bird, they wring his neck and pull the feathers out, dunk him in the water, and he's yours in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, hey!
I don't know.
Farm fresh!
I couldn't eat something I met.
Sure you could. Trust me, you could.
I'd have an issue with that.
If you're hungry enough, you can eat any.
Well, yeah, I know, but you know, I will say this: it's some of the stores that I know, their idea of a fresh turkey was one that they defrosted for you, and it was ready to cook. It wasn't fresh; it had been previously frozen. They would call it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So they would just take 20 butter balls and defrost them. and call it
fresh. There's another one. I can't believe you just worked. So in Memphis, they had temporary storefronts where you could get your Christmas and your Thanksgiving turkey, and you could get a butterball. And one of the things, if you worked there, was you got a free one. And God knows my mom was pushing my sister and I to work at that place every year for her free bird.
Oh, God. Well, birds are...
So there's a Mr. One. There's a Mr. 1% story for you.
Yeah, how about when I work,
we can have a really good butterball if we work there.
God. Hey, when I worked at Pinnacle Bank in St. Joseph, Michigan, we used to, and as senior management, I got the fun of doing this. We used to deliver turkeys to all of our employees in the branches. So I'd load up the trunk and head out to the branch and turkeys for everybody. Eventually, that got too unwieldy because we had bought so many other institutions, so we started giving out certificates to buy turkeys. Early on, that was one of the fun parts of my job, was heading out to the branches with giveaways for people.
Well, when you got really big, why didn't you do it by helicopter like WKRP?
Yeah, that would have been great. As God is my witness.
Unbelievable.
I could have sworn I thought turkey. That's I'm waiting for the article about that one from Marty Kearney, which I get every year the day before Thanksgiving. Yeah, he loves to share that.
Mr. Schmooze.
I'll bet you, Russell, that will be on TV tomorrow somewhere in one of the cables.
It most definitely will be. So there.
It is absolutely the all-time great Thanksgiving TV show. So we have that. The other thing I got to do in the spring was strawberries, was deliver strawberries out of the fields. Southwest Michigan strawberry season is great.
Oh, yeah.
So, two quarts of strawberries for every employee.
You know where this is kind of a railroad story. You know where a lot of the strawberries come from?
There's somewhere south, I would assume.
And every night they would, they'd pick a whole bunch of strawberries, and they would drop them on a somewhat of an express freight train on the Illinois Central line, and run them up to Chicago from wherever it was, Louisiana or someplace, Mississippi, and that's how you had fresh strawberries. They'd put them on there at 4 in the afternoon, and they were in Chicago at 7 in the morning.
Hey, where I live, if you really want fresh strawberries, you just go to the fruit stand by the side of the road, and those strawberries were in the field. If you go 10, 11 o'clock, they were in the field in the morning. They were picked and in the field and at the fruit stand on the side of the road.
Don't you need
by mid-morning.
What's the one where you need the bog, the cranberries? Where it's got to be in the water, you got to slosh around it.
We don't have a cranberry here.
Yeah, where they basically fly. I have a friend that he and his significant other at the time would go up in the Northeast and watch them. They would flood. Basically, they would flood the fields. Is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They would go and see that every year. I really wish I had gone along with them to see it.
Well, Kevin, Mr. Blackchain,
they talked it up, and I was too cool to go.
Well, Kevin, Mr. Blackchain, and tracing stuff along the way, a lot of this all started with railroads, where you put different stripes on the car, you could find out where the boxcar was. But during the Kennedy Nixon campaign, there were a bunch of cranberries that were making people sick. I don't know if they were killing people or not, but they were coming from Washington. And they you couldn't tell it didn't say in the package where the cranberry came from. So both Kennedy and Nixon were campaigning in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin has a lot of cranberries. So evidently, Kennedy took a big drink of cranberry juice and said there's nothing wrong with Wisconsin's cranberry juice, because Nixon had done it earlier in the day. And Kennedy goes, "But if there is, and if I die, at least I give you the satisfaction of taking the vice president with me." That guy had a dry sense of humor.
he was incredibly witty.
And can you imagine if our current president said something like that?
Oh.
He would have threatened their lives, and people would say he needed to go to jail.
Well,
because we don't have a sense of humor anymore.
But anyway, the message for Kevin is, right after that was the first barcodes on packaged produce.
Oh, my God.
So you could tell when that this was from Washington and this one was from Wisconsin. So you could pull the Washington ones off the shelf, because there was no hint before of where they came from. And they did something to where you actually could tell where it came from. Nowhere near as sophisticated as today, but it was like the first, that and the rail cars were like the first push in this direction.
Yeah. And now you want if there are temperature controls required, for example, shipping containers, the refrigerated shipping container to be throwing off readings and adding onto the blockchain like every half hour, just to make sure that your temperature never gets out of whack. Because in the old days, it got pretty hot in there. Well, yeah. Screw it. Nobody will know.
Yeah, nobody will know. It was a more sophisticated, a cab over Pete with a reefer on? Just a regular old reefer? Well, did the reefer work? Yeah. Are you solo, Russell, or is Larissa in the hand?
I'm solo. She's visiting family.
Okay, yeah, so you guys have a great holiday. Right. I'll talk to you Friday.
Double gobble.
Two things, Russell, before we talk about, because you got to have a bunch of stuff to tell us after being worldwide for 2 weeks. One thing, I had a meeting with a client and friend, another Notre Damer, the other day, and he was at the game the other night. And by the way, you're conservative. How come you weren't in the skybox with the three Supreme Court justices?
Not invited.
Not invited? You have to say, you're supposed to say my invitation got lost or I was in London or something.
Yeah, I was in London. Yeah. That's another excuse.
Anyway, but so. he has a friend, and this guy actually gives people some dough. I'm not going to say who or where, but he has a friend who has done very well in life, younger than you a little bit, and he likes to give money away for good causes. And we've talked about on the show, maybe not as much with you, but I did it with Dr. Blade and a bunch of other people, about this homeless situation and the school situation and a lot of stuff. And even the, homeless especially, is I don't know that anybody has put some money together and had a huge study, because Dr. Johnson claims we need to corral a random sample of these people. Corral sounds awful. I mean, they're not cattle. Interview everybody, give everybody a physical. I'm not going to say you're going to do it under gunpoint, but find out just what you're dealing with in terms of how many, if there was a job available tomorrow, how many could get a job? How many have been there long enough to where all the drugs have taken hold, where it's a four-month program? This guy has been looking to do just such a study, that he would fund most of it. And he's approached a couple of universities on the West Coast, because he's from San Francisco, and they're giving him the full runaround. Well, if you give us all this dough, we might put a guy on the project or something. He hasn't seemed to have gotten any cooperation from anybody. Nobody seems to want to take anything of that size on, or maybe they think they're going to run into political issues or what. Would that be something you think Indiana or Purdue might want to do or not?
What?
Are you there? Or did you shut me off when I said that?
Universe would want to do something along those lines. No. Shoot.
Because, clearly he doesn't have the personnel as an individual.
Are you there?
Yeah, he clearly doesn't have the personnel as an individual. I would think that study would be, you'd need medical things, you'd need 50 people.
No, you need a fully integrated school. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you need a fully integrated school. I think that's something you would do through a med school or something along those lines. You're talking about a bunch of druggies as your test subjects, right?
No, what I'm saying is nobody.
What I'm doing,
Russell, is I'm saying everybody says the homeless, but the homeless is it's they're not all the same. And what exactly are you dealing with?
Right,
is what I'm trying to figure out.
I know they're not all well in that, but you're talking about. Okay, what you're talking about is you're talking about doing some sort of clinical type study, and the people that you're going to be using for the study have to be reliable. They got to show up for their check-in appointment, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. Nobody wants to take that on. That's why nobody's going to do it right there. It's when you do these things, you've got to have, and I'm thinking about, I've been working on a drug trial thing with a couple of students from the med school. And one of the issues with a successful drug trial is you got to get people to enroll. They need to show up. They need to, I mean, my dad did a drug trial before he died. They were not associated at all, but he was involved in a drug trial. He actually found out afterwards he was one of the placebo group, but they, and I think it was for heart or something, but they, you know, he had to show up every week. They had to check off that he had said that he'd done what he was going to do. If you're dealing the kind of people that you're talking about, you're going to have a very difficult time having a successful study because of the unreliability associated with your subjects.
Well,
I think that's where the pushback is on something like that.
Well, because it goes from, remember, if I told you, no, you weren't analyzed. I was talking to Larissa about the Franklin Park. You know, that's where the blue line ends, right?
That's part of my commute.
Okay, but the mayor comes out and says, you know, all these people that are riding the subway basically without a home. He goes, we need a urgent care center like within a block of the station, and we should meet every one of these trains with an ambulance or two. That's how bad it is. So
I used to drive to that station and then take the blue line into work. I know exactly what you're talking about. I would, you know, I'd be there at 5:30 in the morning and see them get a dozen people off the train and they'd move to the other side to ride in.
Well, you know, because I mean,
every day
to be.
But I know exactly. I can visualize exactly what he's saying. There is, you're darn right. There are probably two or three people that you know, spent the night on the train that need medical assistance.
Well, I mean, when you see,
there's probably one a day. If you kept stats on such thing, I will almost guarantee that there's an ambulance called to Franklin Park once a day.
Well, I guess
to that stop, and for the very reason that you're talking about.
But, you know, maybe it's because I hang around with professor types like you that I've gotten this odd view of the world. I mean, when the current administration says, "Well, we're just not going to." We're going to cut back on insurance stuff for people on Medicaid or whatever. You know, and if you want to be crazy about it, you'd say, okay, just let everybody die. And I'll say, well, no, you don't want to do that. The fact is, you know, and I'll be blunt, Trump has no concept of the homeless problem. And you know what? Neither do I. The difference is I want to know. So if there used to be a big tent thing outside our window. It's all been cleaned up, but they had a big tent thing out there. So let's say there's 100 people there. I think, and I don't know how you do this. Mm-hmm. What you need to do is I don't want to say grab everybody. Maybe you pay everybody $20 to. You got to. If everybody got a. I just. Somehow I need. Not me personally. We need to know there's 100 people there. And are 10 of them lost their job 2 weeks ago? If you could find them a job tomorrow, they'd be there. They could work 8 hours. You know, 15 of them, it's going to take a week of some kind of good nutrition. They have some medical problem. They're 3 weeks away if we gave them a job and, you know, say working for the city or whatever. Then there's 40 that are so far gone with drugs. It's a 6-month. I don't think anybody knows, Russell. The ignorance about it is what bothers me because everybody talks about something and nobody knows. And I hate it when that happens. Just what can I say?
Yeah. Well, the thing with trying to study that one is. You've got to, you know, it's the unreliability of the topics and the wide of the subjects, not the topics, and the wide variety of issues behind them being in the situation that they're in. And most of it, you know, I've had a couple of friends that never recovered from, you know, a professional setback. Guy I was best man for, and I'm in his son. I've talked about his son. His son's a rocket. His son works in rocket testing for SpaceX. And I know I've talked about, you know, having a godson there.
Yeah.
This guy, when he was 29, was running IT for a regional brokerage firm. The regional brokerage firm got bought out, and he never could get himself together to find another job. And died in his sleep of a heart attack at about 52, weighing 450 pounds.
Well, you know, the issue with people...
Well, but let me finish. Please let me finish.
No, I'm just saying it's all in our industry.
Let me finish the story about him.
Go ahead.
Okay? So my point is, he came from a very well-off family, and his wife is a freaking angel and supported him.
Really?
Okay. He would have, without, you know, and without, if he had come from a more modest background, he'd have been on the street and died.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's that too. It's almost like you got to study people that just can't, and I pardon my language, but just can't get their shit together, you know? And the ones that have a difficult time with that and come from a background where they've got no support, those are the, you know, that ends up being a lot of the homeless people, and then they just spiral.
Well, you...
So, it really comes down to a certain type of mental illness, and I think we could nail that without actually having to use the homeless community.
I was rudely interrupting, sorry, but I would just...
That's all right.
No, but the reason why is you brought up something. We don't have to look too far. All we got to do is look across the street. And how many?
Exactly.
How many traders?
It's not just the poor folks. I mean, I moved up here without knowing anybody, and if had a certain amount of savings and was lucky enough to find a job on the floor and, you know, do all of that kind of stuff, and things worked out. But if things had not worked out, there was a certain time frame that I would have run out of money, and my parents would have driven up here and taken me back home, and I would have, you know, gone back to trying to start over in Memphis. They're just people that you turn 18, you come from a dysfunctional household, and you know, it you're met with some life challenges. Yeah, it's overwhelming to a lot of people. Adulting is hard for everybody, and for people that don't have a whole lot of support, that's how you end up in one of those, you know, in unfortunately one of those situations where you're out, you know, sleeping on the streets.
Well, how many people, the people we know, and just within 1,000 yards of my office here, mm-hmm. on the trading floor, how many of those people used to have a very nice career that now have nothing? It's got to be 5,000 people.
I think there are a lot of people that were, the person that I grew up with, that I, you know, that I've talked about. No, and there's no way in the world anybody could back into him. So I don't feel like I'm throwing him out there. But, you know, again, he graduated college, got a graduate degree, was doing really well. If his wife hadn't been such a saint, I think she would have put him out on the street. I know of another situation where the wife did put him out on the street.
Yeah.
And eventually he got it back together. But that one comes down to a real mental illness problem. And the problem with trying to study that is it's such a variety of circumstances. I mean, how do you classify the person whose wife threw him out versus the person that, you know, never had a head start, you know, but was kicked out when they were 18 and are damn lucky to be alive at 23.
Well, you know, this ties right in, Russell, to what we were talking about with veterans. The difference between somebody who comes
home.
The person who comes home and has a family and a neighborhood he can go back to versus a person that has none of that.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to hear something I learned in London that I had never heard before?
Sure.
If you are in the military in the UK, you live at home and go to work. They don't do the whole you're living in a barracks with a bunch of people. It's like it keeps them more mentally stable and grounded.
I bet they do in like basic training though for a while.
There is some of that, but for the most part. And I remember watching a TV show about a bunch of people in the military, and like they were visiting each other's that was based in the UK a while back. But then I was reading an article on the difference between the UK and the US militaries, and I think there's a bit more mental stability to being within your home and around your support system. There is definitely, you know, I'm not the most woke person in the world, but there is definitely something to some sort of, you know, support system.
Well,
in place.
I think
people that don't have it, and you know, I talk about my sister who lives down in Memphis, who's a very blue collar type person. I'm her support person. If I'm gone, I trust me. You know, if I die before my wife, I trust my wife to take care of her.
Well,
if Susan did not have that, you know, there might be some issues.
I think what you're describing, and we'll go to break here, but is, I don't even talk about Israeli thing because I'm not, I can't deal with this Gaza situation, but the Israeli army was always like that. It wasn't like you sent somebody at 18 and they're out when they're 21, and all of a sudden, everybody's, I won't say everybody, just about everybody is in the army. So,
yeah.
So,
yeah,
even
if you're a hacker.
No, I mean,
they have army hackers.
That's, but I'm saying you and I could have been traitors at age 35 and still for a week in the summer, we're never out of the army. If we're called up, we're called up.
No.
But we're not. Here it's, maybe, you know, who was, you remember, you might have been, you remember Ruth Kahn?
No.
Israeli, two citizenship. Ruthie was terrific. Her husband worked for that law firm that went under. God, when they were played. Anyway, she was she was a tank commander.
You know, my seatmate on a flight, Dr. Ruth, she was a sniper.
Well, you know who else was a guy? Remember Joe Levin?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was
just over there yesterday.
What was Joe's? He was something. What was he, a gunnery sergeant or something?
I didn't know that, but I could see it.
Yeah.
I could see it in meetings now that you mention it.
I love Joe. I absolutely did too.
I remember one time we were talking about launching a new product, and someone said, well, we got to do 2 months of testing, blah, 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 and then a month of assurance. And he goes, okay, so you're going to be ready in 6 months.
God.
He goes, hey, no, he was great. He goes, because I've dealt with you guys, and I know that we've always had setbacks, and it's always twice what you tell me. So you just told me 6 months, even though you didn't say 6 months.
We got to go to break it. I want to talk about this this banking thing a little bit that Hal brought up. And S&P futures up 17, NASDAQ futures up 105. Looks like we're going to be up this week. We'll see how where that lands. But we had a bad week, and now we're having a good week. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 16. NASDAQ futures up 96. We've been rallying all week, and we're continuing to rally here. Dow futures up 59. Yesterday, we had that very odd thing that Russell will comment on, hopefully, with the NVIDIA versus Google flip yesterday, where NVIDIA went way down and Google went way up because Google's going to somehow get in the chip business and use other people's stuff. And NVIDIA, of course, the guy came out and said, our stuff's still way better, and we're having this jousting back and forth verbally today. We'll see where that plays out. We've talked a lot about that with Carl and other people. Over in Europe, we got the DAX up 91.4%, FTSE up 38.4%, CAC around up 38.4%. Those guys are uniformly up some today, a little bit. Over in Asia, the Nikkei up 899, it's almost 2%, that's a lot. Hang Seng up 33, call that flat. And the Shanghai down 5, call that flat. So Nikkei up, the rest of the guys not doing much. Bonds, these guys have been very stable. We're 4.01 on the 10-year. It's been there for quite a while. The Bund 2.68. Oil, 57.89. Oil's going nowhere. And as I talked a little bit yesterday, I'll get Russell's opinion. We've got a lot of people that are in the XLE. They have been this year. Now, last year had a pretty good year. This year, oil's going nowhere. Now, what about next year? As people try and figure out which ETFs they want to be in, I don't know about oil. Boy, you know, gold, however, up $19, $41.59. Gold continues to move up. Silver up a whole dollar, $51.99. Foreign exchange, and this has been pretty steady too. Again, we're 115.7 on the euro, and we're 132 on the pound. So dollar's down a little bit to the versus of the pound. The yen is the one, and again, we got another thing for Russell to comment on. The yen's up to 156.54, and again, can't emphasize enough that that's opposite. When you look at the euro is worth $1.15. Okay, now on the yen, it's the other way around, 156 yen to the dollar. Okay, so you got to keep thinking that when the yen's up, it's actually down. Okay, Bitcoin down 569.86.628.624. Again, the problems there, we don't know what they are, but it's down from 126, so it's lost a third of its top value. Not obviously, if you bought it at 10, you're still up, but if you bought it at 126, not so hot. Andrew, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
All right, it is Wednesday, November 26th here in Chicago. Just, well, no sports from our favorite teams here, just the a couple plays for the NBA Cup. But other than that, straight into Chicago, weather is currently 35 degrees right now. And if you haven't heard outside of your house or car already, the wind is going pretty crazy today. Wind gusts are going past 40 miles per hour.
I wouldn't want to be trying to land a plane today.
Oh, no, it's bad, and it's only going to get, well, wind will kind of stay the same throughout the day, but the temperature's only going to get worse. It's going to be cooling down throughout the rest of the week. We're going to have a high of 38 today. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 51 degrees. Pleasant and sunshine with their skies today. Dry for holiday travel. They're going to have a high of 78. Finally, for Chicago traffic, that pre-holiday traffic or lack of traffic is looking pretty great. Inbound Kennedy from O'Hare to the Jane Byrne is going to take you about 20 minutes, it says here. So if you are traveling, it's a good day for it. That's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, I don't know where you want to start here, but this huge rally this week, I think some of this came with, to be blunt, the market was lousy last week, and then they came out with the, you were in London, but the Federal Reserve guy in New York, which is named Williams or something, came out and said, wait a minute, we might actually cut at the December meeting. Since he said that, the NASDAQ's got to be up 400 points or 350 or some huge number, and maybe even more than that, maybe close to 1,000 from the low on last Thursday. And now, you know, the rumor is that Bessent might be the new Fed chairman. He might do two jobs, all this kind of crap. I mean, we're basically signaling to the world that we're going back to this pour money into the system type of deal, which, you know, people that have, say, maybe own Mar-a-Lago or own the Doral might want to have happen. It's a very, it's not my idea of money management, but it appears to be this group's, and the market has reacted just as you would expect, flying up, gold's flying up, silver's flying up, as we're going to pour money into the system. And, you know, I guess if we don't give people CPI numbers, we keep lying on those, it's all okay. But do you think they can pull it off again this time, just pour money in and not have, other than the bad stuff you and I kind of see, not really affect people? I don't see how it happened. I see prices already
going. No, they can't, because when you do that, the idea is that you're going to grow a bit out of it. You know, we'll catch up a bit, and you know, then eventually we won't have to add money for a while, but we never get to that catch-up point. And I thought they were going to stop. They're going to stop buying assets on December 1st. Are they still sticking with that one?
No, they were going to stop the balance sheet runoff.
Okay, they're going to do something along those lines.
They're going to stop drawing money out of the system, which means they're going to let the money supply explode, essentially.
Okay. Oh, so they're going the other way. For some reason, I thought they were saying that they were going to. Maybe that's because that's what I think they should do.
Yeah, that's what they should do.
Yeah, but I mean, it's going to catch up with us, and we're going to end up having stagflation, which is going to drive everybody absolutely insane.
Whoa, you didn't just say that word. You just didn't say that word, did you?
I did. But I think that's, we are going to end up in a situation like that.
I think we're already there.
Apparently 22 states, I don't know, I keep seeing these headlines, 22 states are in recession. So if you live in one of those 22 states, and you do, I don't, if you live in one of those 22 states, you're definitely feeling it. And you've got to be feeling it. Nobody's getting it as quickly as things are going up in price. I finally saw somebody, you know, I used to use the McDonald's indicator because I got the same breakfast every day and it had doubled in a 5-year period. I saw somebody showing McDonald's prices over the last 5 years and just about everything has doubled. I think a medium fry has gone up threefold.
Yeah.
Hey, it sounds kind of silly, but I don't know how many meals McDonald's serves a day, but it's got to be in the, you know, tens of millions.
Easily. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're selling 10 million of something every day and it's doubled in price, I don't care how cheap it is.
The
that cuts into something else.
I don't know how much I know you have depths of knowledge on this stuff, but one of the things I remember from one of the most educational books was Freedom from Fear from William Kennedy, where he talked about the depression and I think you've read that, haven't you?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
yep. We're in the process of moving houses, so I've been packing up books. So that one made the cut of going to the next house.
Well, you talked about
that's why instant familiarity.
We talked about the 20s when everybody says it was the Roaring 20s. He said it was actually very, very narrow.
I mean,
stock only 7% of the population owned stocks. And they were going to the moon. And the story about the shoeshine boy saying he had stocks. Well, the shoeshine boy probably was in Grand Central Station. I mean, he wasn't in Louisville, right?
Right. And he was probably shining three people's shoes and just listening to them.
Yeah. But he talked about the entire rural population was actually in a depression during the entire 20s. And that was over 50% of the population. Well, yesterday, once in a while, when I want to kill 20 minutes, I dig into the YouTube, right? And sure enough, there's this thing about farmers in Arkansas right now and how soybean prices are down from 17 to 10, and every guy has lost money this year. I mean, when Greg Pappas used to come out before he got his new job, he talked about 3 years ago, the average farmer made like $250. Last year it was like $60, and now it's like way below that. And,
You think being a trader is hard? Yeah.
Because they were talking about this meeting in Arkansas where a couple of federal people came by, and normally 10 people show up. They had like 500 people at the meeting, saying, "What the hell are we going to do? We're just plowing our fields under." I mean, so this idea that kind of nobody's hurting in this mess. I mean, the prices on that stuff.
I don't think that's an idea. I mean, I think the powers that be tell you that. Yeah. You know, I'll flip the parties on you for a second. You know, back during the election, old Don Lemon's in Times Square interviewing people, and they're saying, you know, everything costs more, and you know, I'm making less. And Don Lemon says, "Well, that's not what the government numbers say."
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
both parties. Are totally in denial.
That's a government wide thing. That's not an either party thing. He just happened to be the good example on that one.
Well, I think a little political shot here is I think on both sides, because I listened to Trump's guys yesterday and I can't go there. Then I listened to the Chicago people like 20 minutes later. It seems like it's degraded into Russell. Is the 20% of the people on the extreme left and the 20% of the people on the extreme right all seem to have come to the conclusion, screw it, everything's a mess, just get what we can for our group.
It sometimes does feel like that.
And, you look at Chicago, the teachers' union, we don't care what happens to anybody else, we don't care how high tax go up, just give us ours. And then you got the people in Washington, you know, front running the market, just moving the taxes to where these people don't have to pay, and everybody, the biggest people get so much more dough. Hey, along those lines, I don't know if you had a chance to listen. I know you've been real busy. Hal has been on this crusade now, almost, for lack of a better term. And he got an article from one of his professor buddies, and by the way, you are a professor. Had to do with the changes in the banking laws in like the last 10 to 12 years. Dodd-Frank plus evidently, I forget the date, he was telling me yesterday, where we went from this reserve requirement sort of banking system to no reserve requirement to capital restrictions on banks. And how the way that is written, it so prefers giving one or two loans to a big company or to a rich person versus 10 loans to middle-class people in terms of bank capital, that no bank, if they possibly can, would ever give a loan to somebody, somebody's plumbing company. Because the
right,
you know,
to a small, but well, no, they would, and the ones that would are the community banks that you were talking about earlier.
Well, but I'm saying is, yeah, it's just in general, it's not fair across the board. Where if you put $100,000 in a bank, the bank could turn around and lend $80,000, like when you and I grew up in the world. But now there's none of that. It has to do with a capital. He said the bottom line, if you lob the Dodd-Frank on top of that. To where you want if a plumbing company guy might probably have to sign over his own house, even though the corporation's been in business 40 years and never missed a payment, where there's no way Jeff Bezos has to sign over his house for his collateral.
Right.
But he said a combination of all this stuff has basically destroyed any kind of, not any kind, you could just say there still are some people that will do this in the smaller banks, but it actually has buried any hope of people, you know, getting into business and moving stuff up. I mean, I told a story yesterday about...
Right, and there's a lot of structural things in the world that that have screwed up business formation and taken a small business and grown it into a large business. It's been going on for I would say, decades. And it's become... But back, about 15 years or so, or about 20 years or so ago, I got to hang out with a prominent Chicagoan who will go unnamed, and who actually had a pretty strong interest in a handful of community banks in Florida.
Okay.
And this was like in 2010, 2011. I said, well, you know, how did the financial crisis, you know, how did you guys weather that? And he said, well, we're close to the issue. We don't securitize our mortgages. So we weren't saying, you know, we were only giving mortgages to people that we thought would pay them back. So
they were acting like a savings and loan, essentially.
They were, but that's the point. He said, we still act like that. And that's where the community banks do fall in. They do act in the way that you're talking about, where they take in deposits and then they lend the money out and they try to make the spread. That is really what they're trying to do.
Well, that's what banks are supposed to do.
I know that's what they're supposed to do, but that's the community banks are still doing that. The really large banks that have, Chase is my personal bank, and I've gotten a car loan and a mortgage from Chase down the street. I have used them for that, but there are a lot of people that, you know, I think it was Uptown Bank was my first bank when I moved to Chicago because it was two blocks away from my apartment up where Lakeshore Drive comes to an end. And I just went to the closest bank to me. I don't know how many of those are still available, but there's still some around.
There's still some. But I think Illinois is unusual in that. We were the last state to go branch banking.
Tennessee was one of the last ones as well. In fact, it's funny because one of the kids in my fraternity, his family owned a suburban bank outside of Memphis. And during the 2008 crisis, he broke some laws, and now he's that bank's gone, and he's done professionally. But he was doing some things. So you can break laws with community banks as well. But we had a lot of them in Memphis as well.
Well, we're talking about with, for those that don't remember, branch banking. If you were First National Bank of Evergreen Park and you're thriving, you're all this stuff, I guess you could buy, you could buy an interest in the First National Bank of Oak Lawn, but there's no way you could have put a drive-in facility 5 miles away. That's considered you had one spot, one building that was you. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, can anybody even imagine that now?
No, absolutely. I absolutely do recall that.
But banking is right now the fallback position is use your credit card for 25%.
Exactly. So everybody's getting everything they need. They just put it on their credit card.
But you know what? I other than, you know, we do this on the show, and I'm sure there's other people talk about it. But Russell, and I know as a professor, and by the way, I know you dig into the detail, so does Arissa, in a way. That's why I love listening to you guys. But somehow it seems like a lot of people don't actually look at the ramifications for one person. So it just kind of blows over. You know, you'll say, okay, okay, you won't give loans to smaller people without, like, something. I mean, you know a couple of these guys, because one of them used to trade for me, and one of them was a worked for Schwab, a good guy.
Yeah.
And after the floor pretty much closed up, these two dudes that happened to be, you know, pretty handy, they bought a house, their own dough, in an area. They got a house pretty cheap. They fixed it up. It was good enough for people to, you know, Section 8 and those kinds of things. And it was appraised at a lot higher than they put in there, so they had a profit in there. And they had a renter, and they were doing fine. Well, then they did a second house. Uh-huh. They did a third. They did a fourth. Well, now, their money, even though this now is a corporation that's making dough and they got four properties, they basically go to the bank and they go, well, can we borrow, you know, $60,000 for the new house? Not on your life.
Nah.
What do you mean? Nope. You know, well, if you want to sign over your houses, and I'm thinking,
we need some collateral.
Yeah, and what about the houses? Oh no, we're not going to count those. We're not. Mm-hmm. You know, yet if we had 100 houses and we were BlackRock, there's no problem. You know, how much you want for the next 50? Uh-huh. And I think unless you look at it down to who exactly are we talking about getting screwed, you don't really feel it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they could say, well, gee, you both got $30,000 on your credit cards. Why don't you use that at 25%? But that's not going to work, I mean, for most
people. Right.
I mean, I think a lot of why the startups in the middle class is not doing so good, a lot of it is the banking system doesn't work for them.
No, it doesn't. It's not in the way that it was originally designed to. I think it comes down to a scalability thing. Why would you want to, you know, make $400 million worth of loans to 4,000 different people when you can do the same thing to four different people that you know particularly well?
Yeah, or you want to know particularly well?
You want to bring them into the fold for sure.
Well, what are the hot topics in your classes? I know you say sometimes you don't get a whole lot of. Because Larissa was talking last week about some topics in her class, and she was teaching a lot of estate planning and all kinds of stuff. And by the way, she's fascinating when she talks about that stuff, because it's not something we normally.
No, she knows it inside out. We've like posted a series of videos where she talks about it, and she knows that topic inside and out. In fact, my lovely bride had a question about something in that area, and she. She asked me, but she goes, I really think I should be asking Larissa this one. Fine.
What did she say? How can I get $20 million insurance on Russell and then provide an accident?
Yeah, that was it. It was a fiduciary question. So she goes, I think I explained it well enough. I don't think she ended up talking. They talked as much as I talked to Larissa. So
you remember that movie was it Deborah Winger played? How was it? The Black Widow or something, where she kept getting insurance and these rich guys and knocking them all off by all these obscene ways?
I don't remember that, but I can say, you know, if I picture a woman that's doing that, Deborah Winger is that woman.
Oh, yeah. Was the one guy, she put the poison in the toothpaste tube, figured nobody ever looked there or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sitting there watching this movie going, I don't want to watch any more of this.
You want to buy a new you want to buy disposable toothpaste.
Yeah, no kidding. So we had John Lee on Monday talking about issues over in the Far East, and we got a few minutes. And I said, boy, I wish you were on with Russell, because John did a lot of work over there, but they did mostly in the bigger cities, you know, and did a lot of call centers where people were putting call centers over there. And is the last group he worked with. First group he worked with was Anderson that became Accenture. And they were doing stuff for, like, you know, the grid, you know, the telephone grid and those kinds of things, because that's the kind of consultants those guys were. And, you know, some of the stuff for the airlines, and he was talking about how these cities kind of grew up from nowhere, but the amount of debt, he goes, it's almost become like a zombie economy. It's almost like Japan, only it's not just banks, where everybody's in all this debt, and it's like kind of, they keep trying to put money in the system to keep the cash flowing, but the debt is just sitting there. I mean, it doesn't. Nobody seems to know where it is or how much is from overseas, and nobody seems to care. What's your view? I mean, he doesn't have the professor view of it like you. He's just saying on the ground, it just seems kind of the amount of growth in the terms of has been spectacular, but it's done it in such a way where they've kind of wrecked the environment a few spots. Well, what are you seeing all? You're there more than anybody else on the show. What do you think of all that?
They don't seem as particularly concerned about growth. You know what I mean? They seem to be very happy with respect to the status quo.
Okay.
Which is not an American mentality, but reaching my older age, today's the day before Thanksgiving. Me 10 years ago, me 5 years ago would have been cool. I got no students bothering me. I got to do stocks and jocks, and then I got my whole day free. I'm going to finish up a paper on trading, doing NASDAQ overwrites. Today, I think I'm going to sit on the couch with my dogs and watch movies.
What kind of movies?
My wife has actually never seen Darkest Hour, and we toured Churchill's bunker, so I want her to see that.
Oh, you did? Wow.
Which I highly recommend because it takes less than an hour, and it's just super cool.
Did you go to the one Lou talked about where it was the command center for all the airplanes?
Yep. That's exactly right. Yep.
Now, where's that one? How far is that away from?
That one's a little bit outside. I can't remember. And I didn't do that on this trip. I'd done that previously.
Have you ever been to Bletchley Park?
I have not. That's one of the things I got to do. Yeah, I probably should. I only had one day free on this trip, so.
All right, if you ever do that, give me a heads up because it turns out
I will. You know people.
Well, yeah, Robert knows the guy who runs the place. Actually, the grandfather of Bletchley.
That's so awesome.
And he was going to come here and give a speech to the Federal Reserve. So Robert knows the dude. So you could probably get the double secret tour.
So, but my point is, folks in different part of the world aren't as aggressive as we are. You know what I mean? They're not constantly. They're really happy to hit a point where they're like, you know what? I'm gonna do my 9 to 5, and then I'm gonna do the things that I like.
Well, yeah.
And that mentality, I think that mentality kind of bleeds through to what you were talking about.
Well, how much of that, Russell? And I am, as you know, I'm not the guy like Hal that can do the math economy. I'm more of a behavioral guy. How much of that is every single year? It seems like. Especially if you put the medical stuff in there, which I think is taking a chunk out of everybody's behind. Mm-hmm. How much every single year, I mean, in my lifetime, we've gone from pops worked, mother took care of everybody else, did all the other stuff, didn't really need a lot of child care because mom was home. Sometimes it was the mom work. I mean, it wasn't always that way. But it was basically one person dealt with it. And then all of a sudden we had the inflation early, you know, in the early 2000s and maybe even before that, or say the 80s, and where all of a sudden now you need two wage earners, which puts pressure on the home part, puts pressure on stuff. Well, now we're talking about, you know, 2.5 jobs or somebody's working part-time in addition. Well, so when we say growth here, the growth has been really negative for so long.
For people.
For regular people that you need, when we say growth, it's the idea. Next year should be, especially if you're, you know, you're learning on the job, you should be getting a raise once in a while. You should be maybe getting promoted once in a while. That seems to have gone the way of the dodo bird, to where people are just as worried. Matter of fact, last week I was talking about how a family that makes $100,000, how in trouble they are, in terms of if you're paying your own health insurance. I mean, you know, then we got someone, one of the listeners sent me an article about if you go from 40,000 to 55 in your personal income and you're paying for your own insurance, you're actually down on the 15 grand. I didn't go through it, you know.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, no, I can totally see that because I've worked at places that, I mean, goodness knows the academic world does a great job of benefits. As did SIBO. They're one of the best places you could, you know. A common acquaintance of ours had a stroke and continues to get 3/4 of their salary a decade later.
And he's actually doing pretty good, isn't he?
I think he's doing pretty good. Yeah.
Ever tell you, you know, this guy we're talking about, really nice guy.
I know what you're getting ready to say, Mr. Taiwan.
Oh, God.
Because I'd heard it.
You weren't there, were you? It was up.
I used to go to those. I used to go to those wrap up things. So it's not the first time or the last time he asked it. you've told it, but I want to tell it because I still maintain relationships with some of those people, and I see them outside of China every once in a while, and they give me some insight into what's really going on over there. What Mr. Bittman said was we would have a group from China, and at the end of a 3-week class, we would always go to the we would go to Tudo's, which unfortunately is not open anymore. And he would always ask at some point, you know, what are you guys going to do about this Taiwan situation?
Which absolutely was like a fart in church.
I know. He was like, but he would only do it at the end.
Yeah.
And I do like the guy that said they were like a petulant child that someday would be brought back into the fold.
You know what? The soiree I was at, bad English, was up at the Buckingham Club. And these are people that were from the agricultural group.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
So the young lady who was running the thing, she was like 27. She took the train from God knows where she was to Beijing when she was like 17 on her own. Somehow wormed her way in the agriculture department. Very bright, very attractive young lady. And she all of a sudden became the lead of this 8 or 9 person agricultural group that did Board of Trade stuff. We went on a barge tour. We went to an ethanol plant.
Yeah.
I say we. The guy who ran it was kind of loosely affiliated with PTI. We had a Series 3 here, and I did some business. And you know what? He asked the question. She gave him the exact same answer.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like a petulant child that one of these days will come home.
Back into the fold.
Yep. I'll bet that
guy said it very slowly, which I thought was.
And she said the exact same words. So you can't tell me they're not being coached.
Oh, I know they're being coached. So, and it's really funny because Taiwan was never, ever, ever, ever part of China, ever.
Well,
ever historically ever.
Right, but it was really. We got a dash here, but
it's where the Nationalists escaped to. But it's like if the Confederacy had escaped to Cuba,
yeah,
and the United States continuously said, Cuba was always part of the United States. We want it. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it was all the. If you ever get a chance, there's a book, George Marshall, Soldier and Statesman, and a lot of it has to do with his early. I mean, it's a fascinating book. And but the part I had no idea, Russell. Once in a while, you think you know some stuff, and then you sit there and go. I mean, everybody knows that he was the logistics maestro of not only World War I, but World War II, and then there was the Marshall Plan in Europe. But everybody didn't know, or I didn't know. In the middle, Truman he actually retired. He drove home to their place in Virginia. Literally, he was coming up the driveway, and the phone's ringing. It's like Truman. Hey, I got a job for you. You got to go to China and somehow figure out a way to negotiate a settlement between Chiang Kai-shek and Mao Zedong. So he grabs the wife, and off they go to China. I don't know if they flew or what they did, but you could have taken the flying boat back then, so he probably flew. And he said after like 6 or 8 months, he goes, these two guys were the most bizarre, messed up people he ever tried to do business with. They didn't care how many people died. They didn't care.
Mm-mm.
He goes, he called Truman and he goes, you got to get me out of here. I can't do any good. And Truman said, that's the way you feel. Come on home. Because, I mean, obviously Truman believed the guy. The guy never told a lie in his life. So he came back and then he went to Europe because Europe was already a bleep hole because Morgenthau was over there doing whatever he was doing, not doing a very good job. And he turned the bus around in Europe. But it'd be the thing. And he goes, these guys, they don't care how many people die. They don't care about anything. It just...
Nope.
And then what happened was Chiang Kai-shek lost and basically fled to Taiwan, which was what called Formosa at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe. And then,
so
that's where they hang up. But you're right. It was never part of mainland China, I don't think.
Yeah, actually, I think Japan would have a better claim to it than China. But I didn't say that out loud.
No, I just... Anyway, bud, you have a nice...
Unless, I guess I am never going back to China after today.
Oh, God.
All right.
Yeah. You have a nice weekend, have a nice deal tomorrow. Are both of the young ladies home?
Everybody's home. They're trying to sleep while I shout on the radio with you.
Oh, God, yeah. And I assume the pooch is in your lap.
The pooch is in my lap. And the best thing, they're premiering the French Bulldog balloon at the Macy's Day Parade tomorrow.
Really?
That's the new balloon. It's the French Bulldog.
Well, they're very popular. They're very popular.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
I'll tell you a story about the alleged invasion of the downstairs where the Maltese down the block allegedly terrified the two French Bulldogs. I can't believe that. The Maltese is about 6 pounds. But anyway, if I ever find out what that true story, I'll have to tell it to you because there's got to be something behind. S&P futures up 18. NASDAQ futures up 102. Looks like we're going to be bullish again today. We will do a show Friday morning. Russell, take care of yourself. Say hello to Larissa for me.
Back
on Friday, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.